Hi there, and welcome along to this racing postcast. It's Monday the 14th of June, which means it's Royal Ascot week. The vibes are exceedingly good in this chat this morning. We're all very excited to get stuck into the top class racing on offer for the next few days. I'm Maddie Playle, and this week I'm joined by Lee Mottershead and Mark Boylan to look at what is going to be a superb couple of days of action. We're going to take you through race by race, I'm excited to say, in terms of the Group 1s anyway, and then get some fancies for the juvenile races and the handicaps a little bit later on. So all of that's coming up. But before we get into it, I want to have a quick chat about the ground, Lee, because you're going to be at Ascot, and it sounds like there could be a bit of rain coming towards the end of the week, and that could change things a lot. What are we expecting, roughly?
Yeah, it sort of took me by surprise, this Maddie. I was just expecting, sort of looking out of the window now, beautiful blue sky, hot weather. I was thinking we were going to get that all week, but according to my BBC weather app, it's just that might not be the case. Tuesday, hot, 25 degrees and dry. Wednesday, even hotter, 27 degrees and dry. But from Wednesday evening onwards, right through to, well, certainly end of Friday, it looks like there could be a fair bit of rain forecast. Rain throughout Thursday and Friday. There's a Met Office warning of yellow warning of thunderstorms that would take up the Ascot area. It says some places likely thunderstorms later Wednesday through to Friday with the potential for travel disruption and flooding. So I think we just have to be bear in mind that, you know, forecasts are often wrong. We know what happened at Epsom on the Friday there. They had far more rain than they expected. But I just think as we go towards the second half of the week, it's probably wise to be a little bit prudent and cautious about what the ground is going to be. And certainly the back end of the week could end up riding a bit easier than the start of the week. But listen, it's the weather, it's Britain, so who knows what's going to happen.
Exactly. And also, what goes hand in hand with the ground is the draw. So we'll be keeping our eyes on that throughout the week as well, seeing what patterns emerge and how that impacts the big handicaps, etc. Now, I was a bit mean to both Lee and Mark this morning, about an hour ago. I said, right, I want a prediction for the week, something a little bit different, whether it's top jockey, top trainer, any sort of angle you think you might have, throw it at me. So, Mark, I'll let you go first. And you've come up with quite an interesting one. I like this.
Listen, I don't know if you're catching me on the hop big time now, because I hadn't glanced at the top part, but I do think possibly that the British juveniles might be a little bit better than the Irish juveniles. It's really, really difficult to say it with any great conviction, but just that there's been some performances across the water. The likes of Hello You, I've been, obviously Floatus has been brilliant, you know, even Armour. I think there's a bit of depth to the British two-year-old races. A lot of the Irish form seems to be quite tightly knit, and it's going to be either a rude awakening or the whole entire Irish juvenile base is very strong. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that pans out. It's just something in the back of my head that I fear that they might just be a little bit ahead, albeit Aidan has some really lovely bullets to fire during the week. But interesting to see how that plays out. And that man, Wesley Ward, he doesn't half have a good team coming over, does he? Could be serious.
Exactly, yeah. I'd expect him to have a winner at least this week, Wesley Ward. Well, I think that we deserve that after the Irish dominance at Cheltenham and the other festivals over Jumpsley. So Mark thinks we might gain the upper hand with the juveniles at least going forward. What about yourself?
I have a quirky idea when it comes to Gold Cup, as I raised in my column today, which we can discuss later on. I think just in general terms, Maddie, I'm fascinated to see how a 7-race-a-day Royal Ascot goes down. Obviously, we had a very different sort of year last year. We had lots more races because of COVID. But this is a very new and now permanent Royal Ascot of 7 races every day. We go right through until 6:10, which in a normal year would mean, you know, the end of bandstand singing about 7:00, which is very strange indeed. So I think that is going to be an interesting thing. And also interesting to see how a 12,000 crowd a day Royal Ascot feels. I think anyone watching on TV, and most people, of course, last year were watching on TV because it was held behind closed doors, probably felt that Ascot looked incredibly strange with nobody there. Well, this year we're going to have 12,000 people. And, you know, 12,000 people for an Ascot race meeting isn't unusual at all. You know, look, a lot of those Friday meetings that the track has through the year, they wouldn't get huge crowds. And I imagine that people will be concertinaed to an extent, whilst obviously the race also want to maintain social distancing. So Yeah, really fascinating to see how 7 days, seven races go, how the new races fare, and how much of an atmosphere we get at Ascot this year.
Fantastic. Now, without further ado, let's get on in there then. So tomorrow, the 2:30, the very first race, the Queen Anne Stakes, the first Group 1 we're going to talk about over the straight mile. Now, Palace Pier, one of the best milers in Europe, if not the world, is bidding for a fourth Group 1. Of course, he won last year's St. James's Palace Stakes, but that was round a bend. And then he was beaten in the Queen Elizabeth II Stakes over this straight mile. This is going to be a very different contest, though, and he did have excuses that day. Explosive in the Lockinch when we last saw him. I'll go down some of the betting for you. Palace Pier is the 4-9 favourite. Order of Australia 6s, Lopi Fernandez 12s. Top Rank, there's been a bit of support for him. He's around the 12-1 mark. And then we have Regal Reality, Lord Glitters, Sir Busker, all at 20-1, and it's 33-1 bar. Lee, is this going to be straightforward for Palace Pier?
I think it probably will be, Maddie. You can't really start Royal Ascot in a better way than Frankie Dettori winning the opening race. And Palace Pier, I would imagine, will have to underperform by quite some way not to win this race. Yes, we've got a Breeders' Cup mile winner in the field in Order of Australia, but he was significantly better at Keene than he had been through most of the rest of the season. Palace Pier, I thought his move around the two pole in the Lockinch Stakes was really exciting. At that point, it was the most exciting thing I'd seen this flat season so far, the way he put the race to bed very, very quickly indeed. I think that the ground is going to suit him here much better than when he ran at Ascot on Champions Day. So I think he's for me, is the one. Having said that, at 4-9, he's not the sort of price I could be playing at. So you're looking to find a horse that could maybe nick a place at a price. And I remember a few years ago, I did play on Accidental Agent when he won at a big price. And although Eve Johnson-Horton says he's back to his best, he needs to prove that. So I think Sir Busker could be quite interesting as an each-way play. We know he loves Royal Ascot. He's a winner at the Royal Meeting. And I could just see him coming through late to nick a place.
Okay, I've heard some noises about Sir Busker each way. He's a bit of a shrewdy horse, I think. Quite a lot of people are in agreement with you, Lee. Where do you think the pace is going to come from tactically, Mark? How do you think this one could play out? And do you think there could be anything to upset the favourite?
I was going through it there. I don't think there is a huge amount of pace in here, is there? You know, that's the only thing that maybe if they do go slow, it raises the possibility of Palace Pier potentially getting beaten. Not that I think he will get beaten, I think he'll win, but I suppose it increases any probability. I think in a strongly run race, considering how he stays a mile so well, you know, he showed that last year in Deauville in heavy ground. I don't think he's going to get beaten, but I think Lopi Fernandez without Palace Pier could be the play. I think there's 9-2 available, Lopi Fernandez without. The quick ground angle is really what you're hoping reignites him. It was obviously very disappointing in the Lockinge. He just failed to fire at all. Ryan wasn't hardening when it wasn't happening. But this is a horse that when he gets lightning quick ground, it's what he wants. Now, I'm sure it will be safe tomorrow, but looking at the temperature, as we talked about in the forecast, it's going to be quick. I think this is Lopi Fernandez conditions. You know, he's third in an Irish Guineas, third in a Breeders' Cup mile, second to Pinatubo and a Prejean Pratt. He's running well in a Morris de Geest as well. And that's all on quick ground. I just think that, you know, for example, I think it's 9-4 Order of Australia without, 9-2 Lopi Fernandez for without, and that doesn't seem right to me. I think he could show up really well in conditions that suit him, but Palace Pier is going to be very, very hard to beat. I wouldn't think anything will.
Okay, when I was going through this running order this morning and embellishing it a little bit, I was actually, I can't believe I'm saying it, but surprised at how many times Frankie Dettori's name came up. He's going to have a big shout at being leading jockey at the meeting if things go to plan for him once again. But perhaps not in the next race we're going to discuss, the 3:40. It's the King's Stand Stakes. And a very interesting affair, this, because we have last year's winner, Batash, back for more, but we haven't seen him so far this season. He's a 9-4 chance. Then we have Winter Power, who was so impressive when winning at York, 9-2. Extravagant Kid, the US Raider, at 7s. Oxted, who's stepping down in trip at 8s. Liberty Beach, who won the Temple Stakes on her reappearance, at 11s, and Q Amoro at 14s, along with Maven Kingslin for Her Majesty the Queen at 20s, and the rest all bigger than that. Lee, it's difficult to know what's going to happen with Batash because he's a different horse these days, but he was second in the race twice to Blue Point before he won it. How easy do you think this is going to be for him off the back of such an absence?
Well, I don't think this is the most demanding test that Batash has faced in the King Stand. Yes, he was beaten by Blue Point twice before he won it last year, but Blue Point was a specialist on this, or he certainly loved this Ascot straight track. I thought Batash was sensationally good in the race last year. It was a rare year for Batash that he never got beat. He normally throws in a few stinkers. He had three runs last season, won them all, albeit not hugely impressive in the Nunthorpe Stakes on his final outing. Yes, he comes here having had a winter setback that required a small piece of surgery, but his record first time out is incredibly good. You know, first time out, this horse just wins. So you're really asking yourself the question, does that setback he had over the winter cause you to think that he won't produce his best form? Because if he does produce his best form, even allowing for the fact that there are some improving horses in there against him, like Winter Power and Liberty Beach and King's Lynn and Oxford Oxted drop back in trip could be interesting. I wouldn't want to be siding against Batash. And if he does win, with prices of, you know, around 2-1 available at the moment, you'd be thinking he was a heck of a price. So I'd be with, not against, Batash in this King Stand.
Okay, Mark, has anything seduced you that's come out of the woodwork? Because there's some new horses on the scene now, isn't there?
Yeah, well, I'd actually be taking a different stance with Batash. I think when you're coming back as a seven-year-old, he's got something to prove anyway. Not something to prove in an extent that he is still the best sprinter on, but he's got to prove that he still retains the same level of ability. Then you throw in the hiccup that he's had. To me, he's one of the more vulnerable favourites this week and one that I'd be willing to take on. Now, finally, the angle to take him on is a little bit more tricky, but I think there are options there even from an each way point of view. I thought Arecibo could go well at a very big price. He's around 33s, but they're paying four places in this race. He just comes here in really good form. Now listen, his form isn't of the same level as a Batash, I fully get that, but I don't think we're going to see the very best Batash here, and there could be a bit of a burn up here. You got Kay Moro in here as well. There's lots of pacey types naturally enough over this sort of trip. You know, Winter Power, it has to be one of the leading contenders, but still, three-year-old filly coming into this, it's a real, it's a tough test for her. Even if she has been very impressive, she put up a huge performance last time. Just sometimes when horses do put up big performances like that, you'd like to see them, you know, reproduce that same level again next time. It doesn't always happen. So I just thought Arecibo could run well at a price. Kind of Jamie Spencer sneaking him in to come late. Robert Cowell obviously won this 5 or 6 years ago with Gold Dream at a big price. Just think he could sneak away and could grab a place late on. But if I was back in our lane, Batash, I'd definitely be on the lane side.
Okay, it's time to look at our third Group 1 of the Tuesday. At 4:20, we have the St. James's Palace Stakes, this Group 1 over a mile and over the bend. And we have a really tough horse at the head of the market in Poetic Flair. Won the Newmarket Guineas, went to France and finished sixth in the French equivalent, and then was only just pipped by his stablemate McSwinney in the Irish Guineas. So this is another big task for him to answer at this stage of his career. Again, we have fresh opposition, so I'll take you through the market. Poetic Flair, roughly a 7-2 chance. Mostadaf at 11-2. Battleground, there's been support for him. He's the same price. Highland Avenue and Lucky Vega, both at 7s. Chindit, something of a forgotten horse, at 8s, along with Thunder Moon. And Wembley is bigger, as are the rest. So this could be a really fascinating contest, because I'm not sure, although Poetic Flair's been running in all the big races, whether there's really an established three-year-old among this bunch anyway, Mark. What do you think?
Yeah, but Poetic Flair is like the guy who's ringing you every weekend looking to go for a pint. He just is mad for road. Whenever there's a drop of a hat of a Group 1 mile race around Europe, he's there, he wants to be there. And Jim Bulger's comments about him, you know, in terms of toughness and needing work to keep him at his very best, it's interesting. But just naturally, I wouldn't hold it as a total stick to beat him with. But naturally, I would probably prefer one that's coming in with a little bit more of an orthodox preparation, more so than that, for this sort of race. And I think Lucky Vega could be the answer. You know, it's obviously been well documented that he's going to be heading to Southern Australia. So I'm not exactly sure when exactly he'll be heading down there. I'd imagine it's going to be sooner rather than later. But, you know, you get the sense this is absolutely D-Day for him. I thought his run in the 2000 guineas at Newmarket, it was a point where you weren't sure if he was going to get a mile. They were going into that race thinking, will he stay? And I'd imagine if they had it to do again, not that I would blame them in any way for anything Shane Foley did, but if he had his way again, he actually might have made more use of him because he definitely stayed. And he was coming back them at the line. He's only beaten half a length. And then he goes to the Curra, and the ground just could not be more against him. This horse is a good moving horse who just wants real quick ground. And Shane Foley, I spoke to him last week down at Cork, and he said he thought at halfway he was going to pull him up. And somehow he just keeps finding. I thought it was a cracking run in the circumstances behind Poetic Flair. And I think that better ground is going to bring them right back together again. And the Italian that Poetic Flair has at a harder schedule, I just think at the prices, there's 7 or 8 to 1 or something along those lines knocking around for this horse. I think he's going to run a huge race. Ballydoyle horses have something to answer. Albeit, you know, Wembley getting back on this sort of ground might well be a help to him, you know, considering some of his form last year, albeit he has form with an ease. But if you're a Mostadaf fan, you are coming in on potential rather than what's in the form book. But for me, Lucky Vega, you know, top 2-year-old last season, you know, has proven that he's trained on with a good run. The Guineas back on ground he likes. I don't think there's much negatives with him. I think he'd run a big one.
Okay, a big vote for Lucky Vega there from Mark. I think Battleground, you mentioned he definitely does have something to prove after disappointing at Newmarket, but clearly didn't handle the track there and won the Chesham at this meeting last year. I wouldn't be surprised if he was to bounce back. He seems the Ballydoyle first string, got a first time tongue tie applied. Lee, John Gosden, or should I say John and Thady Gosden, and Jim Crowley, they team up with Mostadaf, a horse that Mark's mentioned. And this horse has gone a similar route to Without Parole, the 2018 winner, in that he won the Heron Stakes at Sandown. The same combination also tried it and only narrowly missed out with King of Comedy in 2019. What do you think this horse's chances are?
Yeah, I'm just not sure about him, Maddie. He's got a... got a lot of ones against his name, but I remember I saw John and Thady Gosden for an interview in Guineas Week, and I said to him at that point, have you got any three-year-olds lurking within the yard who you think could end the season as star horses? And they were both adamant that they didn't. I mean, subsequent to that, John has said this is the worst classic crop he's ever had. So I certainly don't think 4 or 5 weeks ago they were thinking of this horse as one who would end the season as a real star. And that, for me, doesn't tell of the horse who wins the St. James's Palace Stakes. So I'd be siding against him. And I'd be going along with what Mark said about Lucky Vega. I think racing around a bend will help him. I think the way this race pans out, I think it will be better for him than the Guineas at Newmarket and at the Curra, where... they've got the elbow, but it's a different sort of test to ask it. So I think Lucky Vega could be one. And at big prices too, Maximal dropped back down to a mile, I think, will bring about improvement within him. The one that maybe puts me off that horse is that he was meant to run the Diomed Stakes on Derby Day until the rain came. And I just wonder if that means that they weren't really thinking of him as a Group 1 winner at this point. So I'll be interested in how he goes, but Lucky Vega would be my tip.
Fantastic. On to day two, Wednesday, and straight to the 4:20. Another Group 1, the Prince of Wales' Stakes, and we're going to see last year's champion filly Love reappear here. She comes up against last year's winner Lord North. Armoury, a horse I really love, is the favourite stablemate. Or Daria, the Breeders' Cup filly turf winner, is in there for James Fanshawe. Then Might Oberon Sangaris and good old Desert Encounter make up the field. I'll go through the betting quickly. Love is as big as 2 to 1. Lord North 5 to 2. Armoury 3 to 1. Or Daria 8 to 1 as short as here. Might Oberon 25. Sangaris is similar price in Desert Encounter 50s. This is a big ask after 300 days away from the track, Mark. What can you tell from the way Aidan O'Brien's been talking? Do you think he'll have her 100% ready to go here?
I don't know. I haven't heard specifics on how far forward she is, other than that she's been ready to run for quite a while. Like, earlier in the season, I believe there was Aidan had indicated she could be starting back in race. She had entries for races like the Moorsbridge Stakes, I think, and possibly the alleged stakes, and obviously the Tattersall Gold Cup was mentioned as an early target. So she has been entered up and been a possible in these races, but hasn't run. All the while it's been cited that, you know, soft ground is not what she wants in any way. Obviously it was the reason why we weren't going to see her in the arc, whether Aidan's horses were allowed to run or not, or the over the feed issue that arose at the 11th hour. But I just, obviously, I think 10 furlongs is going to be her optimum trip. Maybe 14, maybe, I think 10 is just right because she's got a lot of pace. And I think it's a nice mix between, you know, if they went a serious stamina test over 12 or a mile, I think this is ideal for her. But I do think it's her toughest test. And I don't think she's met a horse as good as Armory in her career so far. Like, he is, I think he's underrated all along. What he did last year, even the Irish Champion Stakes behind Magical and Gaia, that was a superb run. And, you know, he goes down under then, he runs a blinder in the Cox Plate, and he couldn't have been more impressive at Chester in his comeback. I thought that was a really nice indicator that he could have he possibly come forward. Not that bear race would give him the tools to go forward or show that he has come forward, but natural improvement now. I think he's a real, real player in all these big 10 furlong Group 1 races in Europe this season. Lord North is all gears. I actually would love him back at a mile even. I think he's if Palace Pier wasn't around, Lord North could be, you know, the top miler. He's obviously won this race last year. But just something that popped up there, if you look at the result of his win in Maidan in March, just mentions there that he had blood in one nostril after winning. And, you know, just this is going to be a serious test. I'm not using that as the only stick to beat him with, but I think Armory is going the right way in every department, and he's got what he wants in terms of ground, in terms of trip. And if Love isn't 100% geared up for this, and she'll have lots of Group 1 targets later in the year, one thing that has stood out in terms of what Aidan said maybe at the start of the year is that it could be a long year for her, in the sense that you have all those big races. He didn't name them specifically, but you have Breeders' Cups and you have Hong Kong's and all those places to go. And you know, this is probably a longer term view at her overall. Not that I'm doubting she won't be ready to do herself justice, but I think Armory is the one to be with here. I'm really excited about what he can do. Maybe he let me down with a bang, but I think he's right up there at the very best over 10 furlongs around.
You're reading my notes, I think. I'm a big Armory fan too. Lee, on the basis, I don't think Love has anywhere near the best form in this race. We're rating her on potential and visually what she did early last season. If I gave you a tenner, who would you put it on at this stage?
Do you know, it's such a difficult, fascinating race. I think I would put it on Lord North. He was so good in the race last year. I think it could be a tactical affair. I think he's probably as well equipped as any of them if it does play out like that. Because although Sangarius has made the running on his last two starts, they haven't yielded any victories. So he might go on again, but I'm not sure it's going to be a big burn up this from the front. I think, like you two, of the Ballydoll pair, I think Armory is maybe more the one for this race. I think it would have been hard for Ryan Moore to get off a horse like Love, bear in mind what she's done for him in the past. But I do think Armory is a horse who will improve a lot last season. I backed him the Cox Plate last year. He ran a cracker in that last there. He ran a really good race at Chester first time out. But I just think the way this race pans out might suit Lord North more than any. And I think if you look at this year from Dubai, I think his season is probably geared around this race, because I think when you get to your Jumbo Internationals, your Eclipses, your Champion Stakes, they're either going to be run on ground that doesn't suit him or against horses who are just too good for him. Now, it might well be that later in the season, one or two of these are too good for him as well. But I think on this day, on this ground, and the way this race looks like panning out, I would just be with Lord North.
Okay, interesting. So a little bit of disagreement there. Now, the highlight of this week for many is going to be Stradivarius and his wonderful attempt to emulate four-time winner Yates in the Gold Cup on Thursday. Stick with us, as that's going to be our next port of call.
With Members Club Ultimate, you'll get unlimited access to the Racing Post digital newspaper, exclusive Royal Ascot tips from the likes of Tom Segal and Paul Keighley, plus much more, including access to our award-winning journalism, video replays for UK and Ireland, and our horse tracker. Use code ASCOT21, that's ASCOT21, to get 50% off for your first 3 months.
So, as I said, Thursday is our next place to go. And at 4:20, it is the Gold Cup. Don't call it the Ascot Gold Cup, else we'll get in trouble. But Stradivarius, the wonderful Entire still at the age of 7 is bidding for his slice of history in this year's Gold Cup for Frankie Dettori and John and Thady Gosden. He returned with a win in the Sugaro Stakes, but he has some new rivals on the block this time around. Subjectivist is in there for Mark Johnson after such an impressive win out in Dubai. He's an 11-2 shot. Trushan at 7-1. That horse beat Stradivarius on Champions Day in the Long Distance Cup last season. Then Spanish Mission, who's took a step forward this season, he's around the 8-1 mark. And then we have Aidan O'Brien's runners, Santiago and Serpentine, both around the 12-1 mark and 16-1 or so bar. Lee, I'll go to you first on this one, because you particularly have been quite charmed by the fact that Aidan O'Brien's chose to supplement Serpentine. Tell us why, and tell us why you think he's done this, because it's an interesting move for sure.
It is. I mean, I asked the question in my column this morning, is this an inspired plan or a total shot to nothing? And I suppose in some ways the answer is a bit of both, really, in the sense that I don't think Serpentine is going to be winning King George's or Arcs as the season goes on. I don't think he's good enough to do that. But equally, I think he is he's a very high class horse. He won the Derby, albeit in a wacky, wild way that probably showed him to a degree of domination over the rest that wasn't really accurate, but he was a very good horse that day. He was fourth in the Champions Stakes, having started slowly. So he is a high-class middle-distance horse. And I just think I'm guessing that Ryan Moore will ride him, I might be wrong, but whoever rides him, if they manage to get him in front, which he hasn't really had a chance to be following Epsom safer in that Champions Stakes, which was slowly away anyway. I think if he gets in front and he rolls down to Swinley Bottom and he gets into a bit of a lead, I think the other jockeys will face a difficult question in terms of how much rope they give him. And I just wouldn't be surprised if he isn't going to go very close here. Aidan O'Brien won the Gold Cup with the Derby second, Fame and Glory. And I think this horse adds tremendous spice to the race. He's the first Derby winner since 1970 to run in the Gold Cup. Half a century since that happened. You've got to go back to 1897 to find a horse who won the Derby at Epsom and then went on to win the Gold Cup. So I think Serpentine is a tremendous addition to the race. We might have an Irish Derby winner who's won in the Gold Cup, Santiago, which is great. A Melbourne Cup winner in Twilight Payment. But, of course, they're all trying to beat Stradivarius, who would be the most wonderful story if he does go and win the race. There was nothing, I don't think, that you saw in the Sugaro Stakes that would deter you. Yes, he ended last season in a disappointing manner, but the Arc wasn't run to suit him. The Champions Day race running ground that he doesn't like. We know how good he was last year. I just think this is the race of the week. And I think the fact the Gold Cup is the race of the week is a thing that we should celebrate.
It really is. It's a fantastic spectacle every year, but this year, particularly with Stradivarius, who's such a character, and he really is the public's favourite now, isn't he? With the way that the connections talk about him. I always try and take him on, and I invariably always get my fingers burnt. But I think Subjectivist particularly, and indeed Trusha, I'm a big Trusham fan. And if the rain comes, then that could really impact this race, because all throughout his career, they've said that Stradivarius doesn't like soft ground. Now, it's funny that, because in this race last year, he was a 10-length winner on soft ground. So it's clearly something of a confusing point for his connections. What would you be looking for in regards for Stradivarius, Mark? Do you think he'll be able to get the job done no matter what, or do you think he could be vulnerable?
I think he probably will get. I'm in the same camp as you, as having tried to take him on and just kept getting poorer and poorer for doing so. And it comes a point where when he is in these circumstances that you have to put your hands up and say, this is the best horse around over this extreme trip, probably over 2 miles that we've seen for a good few years. And 10 to 11 is actually a fair price, I think. You know, Trushan is obviously prominent in the betting, but his best performance has come on testing ground on Champions Day. And, you know, while he's not pigeonholed as being a soft ground specialist, he has form on decent ground too. I just think Stradivarius is going to be too good for him. But I listen to Lee, I'm actually you'd be very excited looking forward to the race. And I think Serpentine does add an awful lot to it. And you know, Christophe Soumillon apparently was absolutely adamant after riding this horse last year behind Mogul in the Grand Prix de Paris that there is no horse that he would prefer to ride over him in the Arc. There was confidence in that camp that he would have ran a big race in the Arc if he was allowed to take his chance. And this is no mug. You know, the Derby was won in strange circumstances, but this is a very, very talented horse in all falls, right? And he's probably a little bit overpriced at the moment, but I still think he could probably do everything in his power, and Stradivarius is still going to win. But I'm really, really excited. Really can't wait for this.
We're all in that group, that's for sure. Now, from the marathon trip of 2 mile four, back down to the 6 furlongs, and for the 3-year-olds, it's the Commonwealth Cup on Friday at 3:40. And we've got last year's Queen Mary winner, Campanelli, heading the market. Campanelli or Campanelle? Which one would you go with, Lee?
Oh, now there's a question. I would go with Campanelli. I think it sounds
Campanelli.
Nice.
It does sound nice, doesn't it? Yeah, anyway, that's it for the pronunciation lessons. She heads the market around 5-1. The French trader, Sousa, that's what I'm going for on this one. Just slightly bigger, 11-2, 5-1-ish. So that horse is coming for plenty of support. Dragon Symbol for Archie Watson and Ashine Murphy, 7-1. Supremacy, who was disappointing on his comeback run, but a very good 2-year-old for Clive Cox, who won this race last year. He ranges from anything 6-10-1. And stablemate Diligent Harry is anything from 8-11. So we're still not exactly sure who's going to line up for this one. But Campanelli, interestingly, we last saw her over a mile at Keeneland for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf. She finished a good fourth, but that was a big different sort of ask of her from the 5 furlongs in the Queen Mary, or indeed the pre-morning over the 6 that she won, beating Nando Parado, last year's Coventry winner. Do you think she can win this one for Wesley Wardley? Because I think a lot of people are anticipating that the American trainer is going to have a big week.
She certainly can win it, Maddie. I don't think she will win it, though. This is the Commonwealth Cup that's actually weakened because of the absence of geldings. A lot of the horses who've done best in the trial races are geldings and therefore, sadly, can't compete in the Commonwealth Cup. It's therefore, I think, a pretty open-looking contest. Yes, Wesley's filly comes here with the best 2-year-old form, and reports are that she's grown and that she looks fantastic, but I've been deeply taken by Sousa or Swaysa. We'll find out what Richard Halls and Simon Holt want to call her later in the week. That'll be probably the defining answer to that question. But I think she has looked really good. In 2 Grade 3s at Shanty this season, she's been tremendously impressive. Barely came off the bridle until inside the final furlong last time. Her normal jockey, Olivier Pellier, can't ride her, can't get over this year because of COVID. So William Buick was quickly snapped up for the mount. French trainer's got an excellent record at Royal Ascot in recent years. They won't have many runners this year because of COVID, but I think they'll be winning with Sousa / Swaysa / the French winner of the Commonwealth Cup.
Fantastic. We will find out on that one. I quite like a bit of a dark horse here, Diligent Harry for Clive Cox, perhaps the second string on jockey bookings, Adam Kirby on Supremacy. But I don't think this horse should be underestimated. Last seen winning really well at Lingfield. And I also think if King Power's 5,000-1 turns up, then he is not to be ignored either. Mark, take the deciding vote then. Who do you think is going to win the Commonwealth Cup?
This is actually the group one I have the least opinion on during the week. So I'd love to come out here and tell you that you're on the money. The French filly is, I'm just going to go with the French filly rather than making a mess of myself here. The French filly has a huge chance. Visually, it's hard to, or from a form standpoint, I find it hard to quantify it all, but visually she's been very impressive. If I had to pick one at a big price, I don't think that the Irish 3-year-old sprinters are a bad bunch by any means. We've obviously got Logo Hunter over here, who's been really impressive. And I think Mooney Star, at a huge price, she could run well. She seems to have just thrived from 2 to 3, really progressive. Her form ties in with the likes of, you know, your Logo Hunters, Make a Challenge, Harry's Bar, A Case of You. And just when fillies like that start improving, it's difficult to predict where it's going to end. And I just think she has the potential maybe to hit the frame at a very big price. But this is not a race that I have massive confidence by any means. So I'm happier to leave the major views to yourselves in this one.
Okay, and the next group one we're going to talk about on Friday is at 4:20. It's the Coronation Stakes, and some really interesting pieces of form intertwined here. Mother Earth represents both the English and the French Guineas form. She won the former and was second in the latter. She heads the market around a 3-1 chance, but many have been impressed by Ed Walker's Primo Batio. It'll be an interesting week for the trainer, who's also got Starman in Saturday's Diamond Jubilee. But this filly is around the 7-2 mark. Pretty Gorgeous, who's on something of a recovery mission, 11-2. Alcohol Free, last year's Cheveley Park winner, 8-1. And then Potter Pova, who is a horse I'm really keen on for Sir Michael Stout. If she is declared, she's around the 10-1 mark. I'll be keeping my eye on her. Lee, talk us through this year's three-year-old Miling fillies and what you think we could see in this race.
Well, a bit like the three-year-old Miling colts, they're quite a confusing division this season. I don't think we've seen any standout performances. There's not the clarity that I think we had over the mile and a half distance. We've got strong Aidan O'Brien representation. Ryan Moore has already been booked on the jock system for Mother Earth, which suggests that he'll ride the 1,000 guineas with Shemi Heffernan again on Empress Josephine. I suppose that would make sense. But I'm not sure either of them will be adding to their guineas victories here. You mentioned Prima Baccio, Maddie. I thought her turn of foot at York in the Michael Seeley had a bit of a wow factor about it. She quickened incredibly well there. Snow Lantern was one of those behind her. She pulled very hard that day. So I think Primo Baccio for me is the most likely winner. But like you as well, I think Potter Pova is a fascinating runner, a bit like Serpentine in the Gold Cup, because she's one that you wouldn't necessarily expect to see in this race. This isn't Sir Michael Stout's modus operandi. He doesn't tend to bring raw, inexperienced three-year-olds into Group 1s off the back of soft wins at Chelmsford and Redcar. She's never really had a race in those two outings because she's done it so easily. They must think the world of her if they are contemplating running in the Coronation Stakes. It's a race that Cheveley Park's third her owners have had a great record in the past. And if she does win, I think I might find it hard not to put a few quid on her, because in a sense, you're backing Sir Michael Stout's judgment. And that judgment has proved to be exceptionally good in the past.
Precisely. I put her up as a dark horse in a piece we did recently, and I'm really excited to see how she gets on for those reasons you spoke about. Her granddam, Russian Rhythm, won this race for similar connections, I think back in 2003, 2006, before I was into racing, so excuse me on that one. It was one of the two, I think. I'll give another quick word for Peter Shergan's filly, November. She's actually one of the highest rated fillies in the race on official statistics. She runs off 115 and was really impressive in the German 1,000 guineas last time. I'm not saying she'll necessarily win, but I think she's really interesting. I hope she turns up, because it would add a new element to this race. Mark, anything to add? Because this is a bit of a muddling division, as Lee has said. Who do you see coming out on top?
Yeah, glad you mentioned the German filly. She's very, very impressive now. That was well worth watching back if you looked it up on YouTube. I think really here that Pretty Gorgeous is the forgotten filly in the race. Her two-year-old form last year is outstanding, and we're talking about this little bit of rain that might come during the week. I think that just eases the ground lovely for her. You know, some people were disappointed and were willing to kind of discard her in some ways after her running the Irish 1,000 guineas, but there's a lot of factors around that you have to consider. She's obviously come off the back of what can't have been a perfect prep. She's had a poor scope in the lead up to Newmarket, which has forced her to miss the race. She's drawn on a wing at the Curra. She has a wide trip. It's a kind of an ordinary run race. It wasn't run at a breakneck speed by any means. And she's still only beaten 3.5 lengths in a kind of a bunch finish. And I still think physically, like I'm not willing to say that she hasn't trained on that evidence. Physically, she has all the right kind of scope to go and progress properly from 2 to 3. She's a real smasher to look at. And I think she'd have improved an awful lot with that in mind from the Curra. And, you know, getting back onto a decent surface here, I think, again, the track is going to suit her really, really well. You know, maybe if things were lightning fast, that would have been my concern with her, because she's obviously been beaten at Leopardstown by Shale, and again by Shale in the Maiglair. on quicker ground than she would have encountered in the Fiddy's Mile or the debutante, I think it was, at the Curragh, when she won on both of those starts. But coming in here, like, look back at her two-year-old form. It's really, really strong. And I'm willing to write down the Curragh as a race that she's going to improve an awful lot from, where things didn't fall right for her. I think she's a good price. I think she'll take all the beating if she produces what she was showing last season.
Very interesting. Thanks very much, Mark. Now we're into the final furlong now. You'll be glad to hear. Over to Saturday and the 4:20, the Diamond Jubilee Stakes. This race over six furlongs. Probably not the deepest division this year, but nevertheless, Starman has stepped up, as I mentioned previously, for Ed Walker. He won the Duke of York Stakes at, you've guessed it, York, in very impressive style, beating Nahar by a neck. He's the 11-4 favourite. Dream of Dreams, he's a standing dish in races like this, 4-1. Nahar, who I previously mentioned, around the 6-1 mark. Glass Slippers, interestingly, she's still in here. Perhaps many were expecting her to run in the King Stand over five, but the six still an option for her. Art Power, who won so impressively at this meeting last year, 10-1, and the remainder are bigger. What do you make of these horses as a whole bunch, Lee?
Yeah, I think it's actually a fascinating race, this, Maddie. I think what you've got is a blend of horses who have been competing in these sort of races with success or with near success for a long time against a younger group who are coming through, horses like Starman and Nahar. I think of those two, the two that met at York, I'm keener on Nahar. There's a lot of hype around Starman. But hype's the wrong word, because he's proven it. He keeps winning races. He's a very good horse. But I think Nahar probably is too. And in my head is that surge that took him to victory in the Air God Cup last season. I think he has the scope and the ability to make a big impression this season. That said, I'm actually going to go with one of the old guard. Dream of Dreams could have won this race the last 2 years. He was inching in on victory both in 2019 and 2020. Certainly arguably unlucky 12 months ago. He comes here off the back of a pleasing win at Windsor first time out. I don't think whatever the weather does is going to cause a problem. He's very good on good to firm. He seems to handle summer soft ground. Doesn't seem to like the soft ground they get at Ascalon Champions Day. But I can't imagine it's going to be that bad anyway, whatever rain we get. And it looks like I'm sure that Ryan Moore is going to be able to ride him, because Aidan O'Brien's got no horses in the field. He's the best horse in the race on the figures. And I think if he reproduces his runs in the last 2 years, that'll take him close. So for me, it's Dream of Dreams.
Wow. So Lee's siding with the old guard then, the 7-year-old who made a successful reappearance in a race at Windsor 33 days ago. Mark, looks like the Brits are holding sway in this one. What do you think of your bunch? Because Adrian McGuinness has got Harry's Bar in there. You've got Peter Toomey's Son Ayla. What do you think of this one? Because we're wanting some new blood in this division, aren't we, I think?
Yeah. They're solid horses, but I do think I'm going to have to agree with Lee. I think Lee, the case he's made for Dream of Dreams, is very solid. It's exactly where I was coming from as well. And as good as Starman has been, I think he still has to improve to get to Dream of Dreams level. And ground-wise with him, he is quite versatile. You know, his run last year when he was just touched off here was on very decent ground. So, and he's obviously then gone on and won at Haydock on soft. So I think he's the most solid option here in a race that doesn't light my fire as much now as some of the other Group 1 races during the week. The Irish Challenge, I think Sinalia for Paddy Toomey will have a decent say, but probably just has to step up again to match some of these battle-hardened sprinters. She's been a revelation in recent seasons and is more than a title to take her chance here. But I think Dream of Dreams. I'd love to see the old boy go and do it.
Fascinating affair, that one. Interesting to see who comes out on top. Now, if you're asking yourself, why no chat about the juveniles? What about all those big handicaps? And who are the lads' strongest fancies? Well, we'll get the answers to all of those questions in just a minute.
With Members Club Ultimate, you'll get unlimited access to the Racing Post digital newspaper, exclusive Royal Ascot tips from the likes of Tom Segal and Paul Keighley, plus much more, including access to our award-winning journalism, video replays for UK and Ireland, and our horse tracker. Use code ASCOT21, that's ASCOT21, to get 50% off for your first 3 months.
So, gentlemen, we're going to go quick fire now for the end of the show. Juveniles to keep an eye on. Keep it snappy, please, Mark. You think the Brits have an edge. Who in particular do you like?
Flautas looks a really solid option. But if you ask me for my juvenile banker of the week, I'm going to go Point Lansdale in the Chesham. Really taken by him, what he did at the Curragh. You know, he's a brother to Broom, but I did the stable tour at Aidan earlier in the year, and he did single him out as one of the juveniles that he raised among the few of them at the foot of the tour. And he said he was always going to be much earlier than Broom. And by God, that's proven to be the case, hasn't it? I think he'll take fair beating. And Twilight Gleeman, really excited to see what she can do. I wouldn't be a massive supporter at this stage, because I fear a lot of the depth in the race. But I'm really excited to see what she can do, given the hype that's around her. But Point Lansdale, he's the one for me.
Okay, Lee?
Yeah, well, Maddie, on this podcast last week, I said the only horse I'd backed at that stage for Royal Ascot was Flautas in the Albany Stakes. I've added two more since then, but Flautas was my first, and I think she's got a cracking chance. Frankie Dettori is going to ride her, which we didn't know last week. Frankie's already ridden a Royal Ascot juvenile winner for the Crisfords in the past, the Norfolk Stakes on Allaire. I think that's a significant booking. And for me, she's the most attractive betting option so far among the juvenile races.
Okay, quickly, who were your other two bets you've had?
So I've also backed Swayzer in the Commonwealth Cup, and I've also backed one of my handicap fancies, Aries Air, in the Britannia. It's Jamie Spencer up the straight mile at Ascot on a progressive horse for trainer George Bowie, who is making such a huge impression. It's probably a stupid thing to have an anti-post bet in a Royal Ascot straight course handicap before the draw comes out, but I'm not sure the draw will influence me much to that extent anyway. Bear in mind, it's often a lawn to itself. So I'm going to go with Aries Air. And also, like in handicaps too, one of Bally Doyle's in the King George V handicap. So William Bruce didn't win by a huge margin on his handicap debut last time, but I thought there was more in the tank than we saw there. And I think he would be one to look at in that race. I like Astro Kings of Stouties in the Hunt Cup as well. And I think an interesting race is the new race for fillies and mares on the Wednesday. Is it the Kensington Palace handicap, in which I also like one of Stout's horses in that one. Name escapes me. Lights on. Again, didn't win by far last time. In fact, won by a very narrow margin indeed, and has to carry a big weight, and doesn't have a great draw either. So she's got a fair bit against her. But she looked to me like a group horse in a handicap last time, and I think she could be winning that race.
Lovely segue into the handicappers. Lee, Mark, take it away.
Just two for me. I'm really keen on Romantic Proposal if she turns up in the Wokingham at the weekend. Obviously, draw will be important as to whether it increases or decreases confidence in her chance. But she was an excellent second to Sennelia in the Ballyogan, and off her mark, she's been beautifully handled by Eddie Lynham, progressive filly. And I think that if all falls right for her, she has to have a massive chance in the Wokingham. And my other one, actually, I'm going to have to go against Lee in the King George V Stakes. Ballydoyle again, but I think Matchless could be a bit of a dark horse at a very big price. I really liked his maiden win last year. He beat a horse called Laylaps on decent ground at Listowel over 7. Didn't run again afterwards that season. Very messy first run of the year in a Guineas trial at Leopardstown, won by Poetic Flair. But I thought he was a bit of an eye-catcher staying on, and just ridden too aggressively, really, in the Gala Newell next time on testing ground that probably is not him. He had first-time blinkers on, just did too much, is my view on it. I'm willing to forgive him that run. And I think if you do, you look at him here potentially stepping up to a mile and a half. He's a brother to Delphi, whose best performance was winning an Irish Ledger trial over a mile and 6 on good ground. And just, you know, he's a sneaky improver now, this horse. And I think there's more to come from him. I'd be disappointed if he didn't prove to be better than his mark at this stage of proceedings. And I'll have to give Matchless another chance at a very big price in the King George V.
Sneaky improver. I like those two words. I also like the word nap. Drum roll, please. That's where we're going to go now.
This will not be beaten.
Okay, Lee, who's your best bet of Royal Ascot?
I've already mentioned her, but for me, Flautas in the Albany Stakes. Really, really impressed her first time out. And I think she'll win the Albany under Frankie for the Crisfords.
Brilliant. And Mark?
Pretty gorgeous to put it all together again for Joseph O'Brien in the coronation Friday.
Fantastic. Thank you both for your time today, and thank you for listening. If you've got to the end, have a wonderful week. Let us know who you're supporting. Please rate, review and subscribe, and Bruce and the team will be back on Friday to give you a heads up towards the weekend's action. We'll see you soon.